there's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Jenny hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Just want to do things my own way, you know.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting in beautiful high-definition audio, or something quite like it, to all four corners of the globe, of this bluish-green planet that we call our Earth. Well, folks, so many of you have listened to the podcast for so long. Bless you all. Bless you all for your devotion, your loyalty. You have no doubt benefited from the opinions and observations and thoughts permeating from this program. But as all of you day one listeners know, it all began back in Fort Worth, Texas. Yes, yes, all those years ago. What, 3-4 years ago? With me, yours truly, Phil Pritchett. How you doing? But I was not alone. No, I was not alone. I was with our guest today. Is it true? Is it true, Phil? They're asking me out there in cyberspace, queries on Twitter and Facebook and elsewhere. Is it true he's coming back to catch us up on his life, his thoughts, what's been going on for the last several years after moving to Virginia, after changing the landscape of the singer-songwriter sphere in Fort Worth and the surrounding areas for so long, hanging his hat on the wall of the White Elephant, and so many more mementos and memorials have been put up in his honor in Fort Worth and elsewhere. That dent on the floor
Nacogdoches,
where his body crashed into it as he came off the stage. He is with us today, our old friend and the original podcast co-pilot, folks. Kurt South is here. Can you believe
Thank
it?
You.
I don't know if
Thank
I believe
you.
It. I don't know if I can believe it. But yet, here you are, South. He's here on vacation or some kind of journey from Virginia. Of course, you and your wife do still have family here in the area. You're back here with the
yes.
kids. I said we got to do a cast and catch up on all things.
The wife, 3 kids, my mom and dad, we all have things got a little hot in Virginia for a while. We had
yeah.
to come down here, let it cool off.
That's right.
Just some stuff went down. Had to get away.
Had to get away. Let things die down a little bit.
Let the bondsman do what he does. And
things blow over.
So, yeah, we have. I haven't been back to the great state of Texas since I moved in August of 2010.
Yeah.
So, almost 3.5 years.
Good grief, man.
So
it's hard to believe it's been that long.
It's flown. It's flown. I've got a third kid now. Left here with 2,
Ugh.
Came back with 3.
That's what happens, man.
It happens. So, it's good to be back, though. I've been eating myself into oblivion.
I know. Oh, I just got back from Kurt. We're driving just coincidentally past the Rustic, our home here in Dallas, one of our homes here. Had to swing in for some lunch.
Pork chop.
I thought, you know, I'll buy Kurt, you know, lunch. Be a nice gesture. He's taking the time to come over and do the podcast. So I order my $8 turkey sandwich. What does he hit me up for? They bring it out on a platter about as big as like a trunk, like a big
mm-hmm.
slab wood with a couple of big pork chops on there, slaw.
They look like a
they
boat
said,
paddle.
They said, do you want onion rings or fries? You just said, yes. Like, no, which one? You're like, I want both. So they had both fries and onion rings. A great lunch at the Rustic. Well, let's recap. Kurt South moved to Virginia 3 years ago. He's now had the kid. What are you doing up there? What's life like in Virginia? You're home first. You're born in Virginia, correct? Or were you born here?
No. We moved to Virginia when I was five.
Okay.
So my dad went to grad school at UVA. So we moved from Texas to Virginia. I was there till all the way through the end of high school and then came back. And then my parents have stayed up there, so we moved back to be closer to the grandparents.
And so what have you been doing up there? Your official job, landscaping still? You've done that for a long time?
Yes. I guess my official title is Director of Operations and Business Development.
Is that the guy that mows your grass? Should I start calling him that? I don't want to offend him.
Yes.
That's the guy that mows the yard. No, that is the Developer of Business Agricultural Services.
That is correct.
Is that right?
Yes, we have,
I want to be sensitive to that.
We have tweaked the name. So if you're in Central Virginia and you need
or in need of lawn care,
in need of fertilization. Yes. Now we do what we call estate care.
Estate so care.
It has to be a certain.
So the Phil Pritchett house would not qualify?
You couldn't afford
that. I'm not an estate.
You could not afford
it. It is an estate. It's my estate. But you're talking estate like the Palace of Versailles or something like that.
Right.
Like the Hunt family would live in, that kind of deal.
Absolutely. We do that. We make the most beautiful natural stone and paver patios,
okay, right,
walkways,
right.
Driveways, retaining walls.
A lot of grass to be cut out there in Virginia, too.
Oh,
lush
yeah.
Trees, rivers,
Yes.
A lawn care business wouldn't survive very long in West Texas.
That's right.
It wouldn't last very long at all.
At one time, it was like the number one lawn and landscaping market in the country. So
I see.
If you want an outdoor living space, outdoor kitchen, fire pit, all that, that's what we do.
You come out and build the so what could you put it like an outdoor patio, outdoor room, outdoor kitchen kind of deal at my place?
How much would it cost?
Yeah, I don't know, ballpark. To do it right, of course.
To do it right. $25,000.
$25,000.
To really
peanuts.
Do it right.
That's like a weekend of gigs for me. No big deal.
We spent that at the Rustic just now.
Well, it is so great to have Sal back here. Well, here's my question. And answer as much of it or as little of it as you feel comfortable. Have you kept up with it, with the podcast at all? The last several years, have you ever glanced at the page? Because I know, let me qualify this by saying when you left here, you had stuffed your guitar unceremoniously under the front seat of your truck. And you said, I'm making a change. I'm going to Virginia with the wife, the kids, got a job out there. You'd been so immersed in the music
mm-hmm.
thing, the scene, the late nights, the guitar. For so long, you just said, man, I got to make a clean break here.
Mm-hmm.
Not picking up the guitar. And I know of other guys who've done the same mm-hmm. thing that have had these moments where they just put the guitar away for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you've done?
In fact, I gave away most of my gear.
Yeah.
As I was leaving town, gave it to other musician friends, sold my guitar to Tim Love.
Oh, that's right. I remember hearing that story.
I walked off the stage and sold my guitar to
Tim Love, the celebrity chef and proprietor of the White Elephant.
And the Lonesome
and
Dove.
And the Lonesome Dove and the Woodshed. And the Love Shack, of course. All of our friend Tim Love. So he just took that off the auction block. He knew he couldn't let it get to eBay or somewhere, or he'd never get it.
Right.
He'd never get it. He would be
priced out of the market.
So Tim Love has the me and the band play the White Elephant quite a lot. Although it's funny, we never played there while you and our friend Jordan McCoskey
mm-hmm.
were playing there a lot.
Right.
I was out of town more. And then it's funny how once you guys left, there was such a void up there. I think I just started getting calls from saying, hey, man, you want to play here? And it was – it's funny that y'all had left, and yet now the full band is kind of our home there, you know? But it really wasn't while you guys were still in town.
Right, yeah,
we didn't play a whole lot. Still did Woody's a lot and places
right.
that no longer do music, really.
Well, y'all simply put all these other places out of business.
That's right. That's pretty much right. But I tell you, if you go into the White Elephant Saloon, and all of y'all are invited to go up to the stockyards and look around, you'll notice all the cowboy hats on the wall. It's sort of a beer drinker / gunfighter / musician's hall of fame. Only the great drunks And the great Night Owls get their hats up there. There's a lot of great names on there. People you don't, people you do know. You know, mm-hmm. you got your, Chris Walls and Jack Ingrams and
Ray Wiley Hubbard's on there.
So there's a lot of people you don't know. Then right over there, man, right over our Roy Clark picture I always talk about, there is Kurt South's hat and labeled underneath, and right next to it, the Open Road Stetson of Jordan McCoskey. Mm-hmm. So every time I'm in there, I text you guys a picture. I'll take the picture and just
he does. He sends the picture.
The dust settling of the brim just starting to curl, smelling of cigarette smoke, the ashes, the accumulation of dust and grit, and it makes me proud to see it, and then also a little bit sad.
It's pretty sad looking when you see it, because that hat had a lot of history before it ever even made it to the White Elephant.
Yeah.
I bought that hat at a feed store in Espanola, New Mexico.
How do you remember that?
Because I remember that hat. I was working on a ranch out in northern New Mexico, and I bought that hat, and you know, it's got dried calf blood on it.
Yes.
Completely destroyed.
Your blood as well.
My
sure.
blood.
Sweat. Dandruff. Whatever else came out of you. Yeah.
Coated in horse manure. and then, you know, Tim Love tells me one day, hey, we want to put your hat up on the wall.
That's
I'm like,
right.
Well, I haven't really worn a hat for a long time. But I thought, well,
I've got a hat. Sure.
So I got that hat. And I have to say, I hated to volunteer to put it up there because it had always served as a nice memorial to my cowboy days.
It'd be hard to put that to part with it, wouldn't you think?
Right.
It probably was.
And you know, Tim was adamant that I give him a honest to God cowboy hat.
Right.
And I thought, well, that's the only one I own at this point.
Right.
So I thought, you know what? I spent a good decade of my life playing almost every week at the White Elephant.
Yeah.
So I thought it's only fitting that I give him something that means something to me.
I remember hearing a story about the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree.
Mm-hmm.
The big tree that's always a big deal in Rockefeller Center, the ice rink there in New York City. They do the big lighting, Christmas tree lighting every year with the gigantic tree in the ice rink. And there was a story, 60 Minutes or something, where you know they got to go out looking for that tree every year.
Mm-hmm.
The committee or whoever goes out and scans the – and someone says, hey, we think we got one here. So one year, this is a few years ago, the guy – they knock on a guy's door. He's got this gigantic pine tree in his front yard. And they say, man, we'd like to buy this tree to use it for the Rockefeller Christmas tree.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was heavy of heart because he realized, he said, man, my grandfather or something planted that tree when his wife was killed in an automobile accident. He planted a small little tree, and it's 80 years old or 100. It was gigantic and beautiful, and he said, man, I was just, I couldn't imagine doing it. But then he goes, on the other hand, he said, it would be in Rockefeller Center, the most celebrated Christmas tree in the world. And he looks at the camera and goes, I mean, what more could you hope for a tree? You know, it's kind of like your hat. You just say, yes, it's my hat, but my God, what is the highest honor that could be bestowed upon my hat? You're like, it would be on the wall forever in the White Elephant, collecting the dust and cigarette smoke with my name underneath.
Exactly.
I mean, what else could you expect? What more could you hope for a hat?
Well, I remember when I first started playing the White Elephant, I remember thinking, man, it would be so great to just be one of those guys who can walk in here.
One of the great drunks. Yes.
Be celebrated members
of the club.
The celebrated members of the club. And by the time they asked me to be in the club, I was kind of like, man, don't even. I remember I was kind of tossing it off like it wasn't that big of a deal.
Right, right.
And I realized that, you know, I kind of worked a long time to get to this point, and now I'm not really giving it its due. So
sure.
Give them the blood and manure.
Did that happen? Did that happen on the night you, the last time you played there, the last night you played
No, it happened a couple years before.
Okay, so it had been up there for a little while.
Yeah, it had
okay,
been
I
up
remember.
There.
I
it had probably
remember.
Been up there. 3 years by the time I did the last big farewell show.
Because I remember I didn't make it to the quote-unquote ceremony of the putting up of the hat. Was it a ceremony? Was it just hammered up there? Was there some people there?
I remember there was a little bit of a to-do, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, so there's a couple hundred folks, I think, as I recall. But again, my memory's foggy. But it was... It was a very nice tribute.
Tim Love doesn't do anything
without people watching.
That's right. So he's going to make sure.
Did he stand up there with the hammer and the nail
and make a speech of some sort? Raise a glass. Did he?
Yeah, okay. And I remember my last show at the White Elephant before I moved. He got up and made a very nice, very moving speech.
Yeah.
To the whole crowd.
Yeah.
Very nice. So, yeah. Tim does ceremonies well.
Yeah, that's right. He's a good MC in his own right, for sure. Well, so am I to assume now, then, that you do not own a guitar?
Yeah, pretty much. My son has a little small kid's guitar.
Okay, you kind of pluck around on
a little bit. My brother Kent, who played with me off and on, and now lives in Virginia also.
Great instrumentalist.
Yeah. He has an old guitar of his that he lets me keep at my house that maybe gets played a total of 5 minutes a month, maybe.
Right.
I just don't have time.
Yeah.
I don't have time for
work, kids, and yeah,
work, it's just kids. I mean, I went from living the life of pretty much a night owl,
right?
Working at night, getting to sleep late. Some mornings I'm up as early as 4:30.
Yeah,
usually at the office no later than 6:30. You know, work 10, 11, sometimes 12 hours. You get home,
yeah,
and you play with the kids, spend time with the wife, eat dinner.
Do you find yourself curious? Do you keep up with the goings on of the Texas music thing that you left behind?
Not really.
I mean, it's not about interested at all.
I hate to say this.
Because you'll still call me when you do call. You're like, tell me what's going on.
Who's in rehab and who's not?
I'm like, well, I don't know.
You always call me
for some gossip on what's going on.
You're my one touchstone to the past on that stuff. And I hate to say it, it's always more of a morbid curiosity than it is, hey, how's it? Because you want to hear
that, man, this guy put the firehouse the other night. 42 pages. No, yes, yes, that was a disaster. Of course, that's usually my gig.
But I don't tell you that. The inner workings of the music business,
right,
unfortunately, is a collection of usually pretty bad stories.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
stuff you don't want to.
So it's. I feel like when I call you and ask, I feel like I'm driving by an accident on the highway, and I want to get your take because you're on the scene. But it's been a pretty clean break.
Yeah.
To really answer the question, for the longest time, I didn't even listen to music really.
When I just really pulled out
because, you know, I was doing a career change. I mean, before I got into music, I was in landscaping and agriculture.
Yeah.
So I kind of was.
TCU Ranch Management School. Yeah.
So I was going back to familiar ground, but it had been a long time since I'd been there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had to go do some education to re-up on certifications and get this license and that license. And
knowledge of manure and et cetera.
Well, and convince a potential employer that, what have you been doing the last 10 years? Playing gigs.
Yeah, like gigs. What
call,
do you mean?
Call Drew Brown at the Blue Light in Lubbock and for
I'll tell
a
you how great I am.
Call Phil, and they're like, who's Phil? Yeah, Phil Pritchett.
I have a Kurt South resume in front of me. He says he used to...
He hasn't returned my calls. Like, yeah, Phil never calls you back. But
yeah, your resume would have been pretty bad that first year
actually,
had you not landed in that job.
But my music vacation that lasted the better part of 10 years, my first employer in the new industry... He hired me because of that. He kept calling me back, going, "Look, tell me about, what were you doing playing these Monday night gigs? Monday night, do people go out on Monday night in Texas?"
Yeah,
it's like, yeah,
sure.
He wanted to hear all the details, and he thought it was pretty fascinating.
Yeah,
and then I remember he gave me a quiz on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "I'm going to ask you some basic questions to see if you know anything about the landscaping industry."
Grass, yes.
And he just started hammering me, and I was good on my feet. I remembered all that stuff pretty much. And he was like, "Man, I was just reading these off a page. I didn't even know the answer to half of these questions. So you impressed me. So the job
Welcome
is
aboard.
Yours.
Off to the landscape business. Well, it begs the question too. I mean, you've made a clean break. But is there a part of you that? Not that you regret what you're doing now, but that misses it. I mean, do you think about it fondly, your years in music?
Not really.
No?
I hate saying
that. Is it a bittersweet thing or not sweet at all? Just bitter.
I'll tell you, I look at it, I'm grateful because it supported my new young family for mm-hmm. several years. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was our sole source of income.
Right.
I appreciate it for that. I appreciate it for some good friendships that I made. But otherwise, you can keep the rest of it.
Is that right?
Yeah, really.
Come on.
No,
you don't have no fond memories of, I don't know.
Oh, there are fond memories
I guess that's all you've got.
Yeah, I have fond memories of, me and Phil and Jordan Powell are eating at this Chili's in Nacogdoches and this happened.
Laughing about this, right.
But stuff like that. But again, that just, it goes back to the friends, you know. I've got fond memories of people. But the overall scope of what I did, not to belittle it or anything, but I don't look back at my quote-unquote music career and feel like it was that significant.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't try and put too much weight on it. It was what it was. I had fun doing it. And I feel bad sometimes because every once in a while I'll still hear from people who will say, man, you know, you're this album or this song just meant so much to me. And
I know when you're playing again, you know.
I feel guilty because it's way more important to that person than it is to me.
Yeah, that's well said.
And I hate feeling that way because when you start out in the music business as a songwriter or whatever, you want to make that connection with people. That's all you're wanting to do.
Right.
Is make that connection. And then you finally make it and then, you know, you move on.
Well, you change. Yeah, I mean.
And I changed. I'm not anywhere near the person I was even 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So there's so much is different now that it's hard for me to even relate to the guy I was 8 years ago playing the gigs. So it's almost like I'm having to get to know myself again, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
no,
you know,
it does.
I don't sit around bitter about it or missing it, going, you know, if I could just get back in the game and get back in the studio, it never crosses my mind.
Yeah, you're right.
Never crosses my mind. I haven't even attempted to write a song.
Well, all right, a lot of our listeners are going to be sad to hear that because we got people ask me about you and email me about you, what you're doing and everything.
Yeah, don't be sad, listeners.
That's a good thing.
I'm happy with it. I'm happy with it.
Well, it's kind of like we were talking earlier that all of us experienced that in some way. I guess when you do anything for a long time, especially in the arts, I guess you wouldn't get it in your business world. Maybe Warren Buffett gets it. Man, you're not trading like you were in 1978. Yeah, man. Hey, that was then. This is now. You know, that's probably not what happens. Maybe to some degree, but you do get that. I mean, you know, we play all of our gigs, but we don't travel like we used to.
Mm-hmm.
We don't stay out as late as we used to. Yeah, you know, there's just I'm doing my cover Beatles tribute band. The British are coming band, which is a blast, and it serves our purpose as well. It's a lot of fun. It keeps things fresh for us playing music, and affords us the opportunity to do a lot of different fun stuff without having to go out of town. But yeah, sometimes you're doing those gigs. I am, and some guys out there just going, man, how come you're not playing Maria? What's going on? And like you say, you made that connection once. Mm-hmm. That's all you're trying to do. And now I kind of feel sad or embarrassed. I'm kind of, you know, you can't help it. You're kind of like, oh, yeah, man, sorry. This man, that was like, man, but, you know, I used to go see at the Tap. I'm like, yeah, man, that was like 2002. I mean, hey, I remember those fondly, but
that was four
damn,
kids
dude.
Ago.
I'm just like, I you know, they never begrudge me for it. They're always very – very nice and everything. Oh, yeah, this is great. But, yeah, you do run into that. I think in the arts, those recordings, they're frozen in time.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike recent years past where it was frozen in time on a CD, now it's frozen in time and available eternally on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And people can still run across that stuff. And they might not know when it was recorded so that people say, hey, man, I love this. You know, when's the next time you're going to play Heritage Way? In concert. I'm like, what?
Heritage Way was never played live.
Yeah,
sir.
I don't know. Some obscure album of mine that some guy in Wisconsin stumbled across on Spotify. Yeah, I was listening to Elliot Smith and it had your name on it. I don't know. Somewhere I'm just kind of like, oh, yeah. You know, man, we don't do, you know, he's not going to be interested in the Beatles thing I'm doing. I don't know.
Right,
or whatever.
Right.
Or my new album or.
But, well, I'll tell you this because I don't want it to sound like I'm just – shaking the dust off of my feet off on the last however many years of me being a part of music.
Yeah.
Because I look at it this way. I met my wife through the music business. You know, my son's first 5 years were funded by the music business. Uh-huh. I have a lot to be thankful for on that end. But when you take something like music or golf or whatever your passion is.
Right.
I heard Paul Stankowski, the great PGA pro, talking about this.
That is no question the first Paul Stankowski reference on the podcast.
You knew it'd come from me.
Great goateed PGA golfer. Yes.
But Stankowski was talking about how he's pretty much retired from golf.
Yeah. He's probably 40-ish, maybe.
Yeah, he's in his mid-40s. Yeah. Doing something completely different, but... You know, he says you take something you love, but then you have to wring everything out of it. You have to make it your not just your passion, but it has to be your financial support. It becomes your touchstone for everything in your life.
Right.
And sometimes things just aren't built for that.
Yeah.
And with music, I felt like I was asking so much of it. It wasn't enough that I could listen to it, create it, and enjoy it. And be passionate about it, but I needed it to bring in X number of dollars a week.
Right.
Or the house payment wouldn't get made. Right. You know, that kind of thing.
It puts it in a different perspective and makes it hard.
And I don't know about you, but I stopped really being a music fan. Mm-hmm. And I just became more of a critic and a maker of music, which being those two for me were never as fulfilling as just being a music fan.
Right.
I stopped listening to music for the most part and... You know, now I just can listen to music as an average fan and appreciate it. And I've gone back to my roots and realized this is what made me fall in love with it anyway. Right. And now I can just enjoy it for what it is and not have to worry about whether or not I'm going to get a gig next week.
Right, you know? Right.
So. Yeah.
Well, man, journeys, life, it's interfering with all of our, it's relentless. It's a relentless pursuit. Well, folks, Kurt South is here. He's in town for a few days. We're going to talk to him some more, man. Next week, I want to get more into Kurt's there's all kinds of stuff in the news and things. Kurt is always such a humorist observer of, oh, God, everything from what? The Olympics to so many other things. So we're going to talk about more of that, about that next week. Thrilled to have Kurt South here, the old co-host of the podcast. Looking great. You're looking great. Fit and trim. Healthy as a horse.
Oh, so healthy that
I'm
just obnoxious.
You deserve it, man. You deserve it. Kurt South has been here, folks. Check his stuff out online. It's all still out there, man. The vault is just the Kurt South vault is out there. Some of it recorded by yours truly, Phil Pritchett, man. Floating around. Well, that's all the time we have today on the podcast, folks. Phil Pritchett here. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com. Let me know what we're doing right or wrong. Or if you want to book the band, email that address or just call me, 817-733-5256, and let me know what we can do for you. Folks, that is all the time we have here on the podcast. We'll see you next week. My thanks to Kurt South. Good to see you, man.
Thanks for having me, man.
We'll see y'all next week, folks. Much tougher. Hello.